Hamburger.
Hello and welcome to Uncovering the Seniors, our podcast about the avant-garde music scene here in Copenhagen. I'm Jan Kadreit and my constant co-host is Jan Arne Ranes. Our guest today is the great TSO, but before we start the talk with him, I would like to make some general statements about the podcast. First of all, we are very, very sorry that we didn't upload any episodes in the last few months. We took a corona break. Second, and much bigger thing is, the Mannheimsklubben has closed down. That, of course, was a big shock to the scene and made a lot of people very sad, us included. But yeah, Kristen Oskull has decided to not start the whole thing again, even after the lockdown. So that, of course, means that also our talks with the artist in residence of Mannheimsklubben will not continue. So from now on, we will just invite people that we think are very important in the scene. And or if you make any suggestions to us and write them to us, we will invite people and just have talks that are not centered around the artist in residence anymore. Another thing is, as you might have noticed, that we have another host here on the Uncovering the Seniors podcast channel, which is Tomo Jakobsen. Tomo has made his own podcast and has a few episodes ready of interviews that he did, also connected to his festival that he hosted. And the first episode is, of course, already online here on this channel, his interview with William Parker and Hamid Drake. Great episode. Check it out if you haven't already. Also, we have some older episodes that we recorded over the last year and haven't uploaded yet because they needed still some editing and an intro. And we will do so now in the next 1 or 2 months. That also actually includes a talk with Tomo Jakobsen, our new co-host here on the Uncovering the Seniors podcast channel. Okay, but now, without much further ado, let's get into today's episode, which is with our guest T.S. Høy. T.S. Høy is also known as Dane T.S. Hawk, or Thorsten, and he's a multi-instrumentalist, composer, author, poet, and autotainer, as he calls himself, and a very important figure here in the scene for a long time already. Since I'm recording this intro now after we actually had the talk, I can tell you a bit about what we're going to speak, which is the history of the scene, how Thorsten perceived it and how he grew up in the scene here, also how he started playing the instrument, why there were punk musicians shouting that he should die, and we speak about his newest project as well, and many other things. Thorsten is a great talker, so it's also very nice to just hear him speak and have him tell some stories. And actually, when he came in, we just hit record because right away he was talking about interesting stuff. He told us that the day before we recorded this episode, he was at Kristen Oskull's place and they played a game, which is a game of, it's connected to the downbeat blindfold test, where they listen to music and then you have to tell as much as possible about the music that you know. So you have to tell who are the musicians, what's the name of the album, if you know where it was recorded, when it was recorded, all that. It gives you points, and then at the end of the day, of course, there is a winner. Since we just hit record and just started right in, it's maybe a bit of a rough intro, but I promise you, the whole talk with him is super interesting, and you will get into it. So let's jump in.
And Kasper Tranberg.
Yeah.
And then we have some writers, but they died, so we were very unhappy about that, jazz writers. Yeah. And then we are inviting people who wants to check in, like Jeppe Seeberg, or younger guys, or girls. But mostly of them, they are... They're not clever enough to be part of the game because
you need some hardcore references,
it's so nerdy.
Yeah.
And because we know a lot,
But do you get kicked out if you don't get a certain amount of
no,
right
no, no,
points?
But Kresen, he's very much into the game of it.
Yeah.
So you have two teams, and then you fight.
Like the downbeat blindfold test. Yeah. You play music.
Yeah. And then you have the host. If it's Kresen, then he's the ruler.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
He can overrule. He can give the points that is far out. And if I'm the host, I can decide what I'm going to do. Yeah. This was a very intelligent answer, but it's wrong. But you will get half a point because of the of the closeness of it or the fun of it.
It's like when you get the it's Sonny Rollins record where he only plays soprano or something. If you get that and you guess like maybe it's someone close to that, and then you get
everything.
Yeah.
So if you can guess all the musicians, the title, the date, the company, maybe of the record.
Yeah.
And if you have something to further tell,
like knowledge about the conditions or something, or like
temperature of the room.
Yeah.
Okay, but I mean, Kresen must be super good at this game. He knows
super
so
good,
many
and
obscure.
Me too, and Kasper.
Kasper's Trondberg. Good,
Imagine also Jakob would be quite good at it.
No, because he's more specific.
Okay. Yeah, he has like more eclectic
taste. A lot of good people, but they're not in this broad view of things.
Okay.
So they will go into the avant-garde. Mm. Then they will know everything about that.
Okay, so this is just everything. It's not just jazz. It's just like...
No, that's the whole jazz family.
Okay, it's a jazz
the whole so jazz history. And... things connected to that.
Okay,
so there can be also some kind of world music.
Yeah.
It could be some compositional music and hip-hop and some related hybrid music.
Because, I mean, there are hip-hop albums with jazz musicians on. And
Sure. But that's we did that last day. And then we had all John Chikai's books.
Oh, yeah.
We have to give it to each other.
Yeah.
Well, big piles of his books. And then that's the ones that's not going to the museum.
Oh, okay.
Or to the library. All his things are
there. Oh, yeah, there was
there.
This thing he talked about.
But then his family gave me and Kresen and to collect the things and then give it to other people.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we did that too, but like, he didn't have birthday. It was just because he was too busy.
Yeah.
Kresen on his birthday. Right?
Yeah.
But his birthday was on the 7th, so that's like...
Yeah, that's tomorrow.
What day is today?
It's sixth. Friday.
The 6th?
Sixth. Even not 5th. The 5th?
Sixth.
So
sixth.
Tomorrow's his birthday. Okay, yeah, good. I thought I forgot it.
No. And how's my voice?
Oh, it sounds great
in
my headphones.
But do you want... is okay as now?
Yeah, we're just talking. We're recording.
Yeah.
We started recording. Because your stories are just awesome already. So
okay.
So we just went for it.
We are not going to just ask you question over question. Let's just have a loose conversation. And let's... I mean, we usually want to speak a little bit about the scene in Copenhagen.
Yeah.
And especially your knowledge about it. But whatever comes up. If you want to speak about food, we go for it.
Anecdote, everything is
okay.
Cool.
So what you just explained right now was super interesting.
Okay.
Yeah, it's really nice.
And then we had some radio producers as friends also. And when they could guess like, the Thad Jones Mel Lewis band...
Yeah.
In 1967, okay, I will start with all the brass, the woodwind, the everything, and then they get, you know, like 24 points.
For one
they
fucked.
They do the
like
big
that.
Band stuff. Yeah.
So you have to wait for, but this is Sun Ra.
Yeah.
I can do the same.
The Art Ensemble of Chicago.
Yeah, jazz in the space age. Yeah, with there's also like a lot of people.
But that's great fun.
Do you know the Glasperlenspiel from Hermann Hesse? In English, must be Glass Pearl game.
Yeah.
I tried to think about a way to play that connected to music. It should be similar, I guess. But
yes.
I don't know that, but what is that?
So Hermann Hesse, German writer, very famous one. He wrote a book called The Glass Pearl Game, I guess, in English.
Yeah.
Das Glasperlenspiel in German. Yeah. And it's a meta game, I would say. Yeah. So it's connecting all the sciences and arts in one big game, and it's only very highly educated players that can play this game. Almost like a sect that plays this game.
Okay, it's a novel.
It's a novel. I should have said that.
No, yeah.
And then, so the game is never really explained in the book, although the book is named after this game, and it's all about one player playing this game and playing one specific game. But you can conclude from the book that it's about making connections and abstractions of different disciplines in science or art and bringing them together to form one thesis.
Okay.
But all in a playful manner.
Yeah.
And they are highly philosophical games.
Okay. When is this book from? Is it like...
It's like...
1800s?
No. 1900 something. Yeah. So it's, I don't know. Yeah. It's like...
So is it connected
70s, to... 60s? I don't know.
Before that. Yeah.
Is it connected to game theory and that movement?
No, not at all.
There's nothing about that.
No.
Okay.
But he was very much absorbed by the hippies at one point.
Yeah. I mean, he also has the book about Buddhism, basically, right? Like Siddhartha, which is a great book as well. Yeah.
And the Lonely Wolf.
Yeah, Steppenwolf.
Steppenwolf.
Yeah. Yeah. So don't know the English names. So.
Yeah. But before, I used to say that when I grew up in the 80s, in the Danish scene, there was only a jazz scene.
Yeah, okay.
If you had a experimental scene, it was so little that you knew the 20 people.
Okay,
So it was so narrowly. And I came into Copenhagen, and while Peter Ole, P.O. Jørgens, the drummer, he moved north, but we moved to Copenhagen. But he could go to Hamlet City, as we call it, Helsingør, where he had this big house where we always could practice.
Mm. Oh, wonderful.
But he went the other way. So we had to go from Copenhagen and practice a lot up there.
So that's where he was like the...
He was a center because he had this big surroundings where we could always practice. Yeah. It started like a TB in a loft.
Yeah.
But then he expanded slowly. But at that time, there would be like the old avant-garde. Like Chikai, he would be in and out of Denmark. He taught me to play in the suburbs. He had withdrawn himself from the commercial life and just settled as a school teacher in music and was meditating. And I thought that it was very strange with this tall gentleman from the African-looking guy, which was a seldom sight in the suburb of Denmark at that point in the mid-70s. And then I worked at the library and at the music department, and I recognized him from the cover of the New York Contemporary 5 records and things like that. Mm. And I heard that he had a flipper band also in the community or the suburbs. So sooner or later, I went to him and said, hey, I wanted to play saxophone. And then he talked Danish to me.
Mm.
Which was very surprising because I didn't know really who he was. So I said in English, I would like to learn to play saxophone. Jamen for Sander, jeg for Jylland. And then he got me a saxophone I still play on. And then I was taught to play saxophone and notes and all kind of improvisational things, improvisation games, and very fast, because I practice a lot, I came into this flipper band, where Peter Ole the P.O. Jürgens. Oh, yeah. He was the drummer already, and we got acquainted very early. So we have been playing together since 75 or something, 76, since we were young, very young guys.
Yeah.
But at that moment, he was there, and Christian Kühl, now he's dead, unfortunately. But his friend, Peter Friis Nielsen,
yeah,
the bass player, the drummer, awesome. Klaus Boy, they were there. And there was a little organization called Scrap with experimental musicians. And then there was our group, the trio, still existing, called Cockpit Music, playing punk jazz. Mm. Or that's what they said in Copenhagen. We were playing not the old avant-garde. We were playing like fast, frenetic type of jazz, electric jazz.
Okay, is it so, like Primetime or Ornette Coleman?
Yeah.
Was that at the height of the punk?
Yeah, but then I was, because in Copenhagen, I moved there in 80.
Yeah.
In the what do you call it? Skæringspunkt. Yeah. From 79 to 80.
Yeah.
I moved into a big, where you have club rooms instead of having a collective. You have these small rooms in old big flats.
So
you had a number.
Yeah.
But my neighbors, that was the drummer of Sort Sol, the Sots, the prime punk band in Denmark. And they wanted to expand and do experimentations. And then I moved in there and I didn't know that I was going to be neighbors with them. Mm. So very, very fast, I was into the Danish experimental rock scene.
Okay,
but I was not a rocker.
But was that like connected? Was the whole of the avant-garde or they connected?
No, they were just the prime punkers, but they wanted to play further. They didn't want to be 1, 2, 3, 4 punk anymore because they were the same as every good musician that you want to experiment and you want to move.
Yeah.
You don't have to stay in.
Also, not really punk if you just play traditional punk all the time,
no.
Right?
Like. But then there was a section of Danish punk who thought that Torsten Høgh, he should do. He should die because they thought that I was spoiling the good old punk band because then they started to experiment with longer stretched compositions and I was there. And there was a violin player.
So you're the Yoko Ono.
Yeah.
Should be on your business card.
Torsten Høgh, han skal dø. But then we introduced this Cockpit Music to the punk scene, and we were very welcome because they called it, but this is not jazz, this is punk jazz. It's not avant-garde jazz because we played very more like funky, abrupt things instead of doing this unrhythmic or arrhythmic sort of 60s stuff. So that was a very fine period. But it's only to tell you that if we waited for the next wave to come, because we were the only one, Cockpit, and we were a trio.
Yeah.
So we had all the old friends that was playing the old avant-garde, and then there was no one else. Mm. And then there was an Aarhus band called Picnic. They came a little later. That was more like vocal band also, but they had some of it, and they were later than us. And in Denmark, we were very happy when things happened.
Yeah.
There are some youngers, but there was never enough to throw us off. Yeah.
But were you welcomed in venues and stuff when you were like kind of the only one doing this thing? Were there like places you could play?
No, it was still very much like, we are playing jazz, you are not.
Okay.
And we were not founded in jazz. We were founded in being hybrid because Chikai said to us, go and play yourself.
Yeah.
Whatever you want to do, be yourself. And he didn't play jazz either. He could more or less do that, and maybe I could do it in some sense. I have tried to play some of my favorites on a CD with Kristen and Bosse, where they actually helped me, so I could play a little Ellington or a little Monk or a little Lasse Gullin from Sweden or something, my favorites. But otherwise, I'm on my own with a lot of other people. So I would rather compose my own material or play my friends' material.
Yeah.
But then we were... I will not say we were welcomed, but we were able to play in the jazz clubs once or twice a year.
Okay. That was the crazy night, kind of.
Yeah. Yeah. We, so in that sense, we were not ignored, but we were not favorites.
No.
But then, because we thought about it early on, so we didn't mind that they had the jazz clubs, because we also play the rock clubs.
Or
we played everywhere where you could supposed to play. But there was no 5E.
No.
There was no H15. There was no Mayhem. There was there was Ungdomshuset, the squat in Rysgade, the big one.
Yeah, that was in close by Norrebro Rundell, right?
They were closed.
That's been torn down?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where there's empty ground now.
Yeah, it's just like a...
Because it's so much into a Copenhagen scene, so nobody actually dares to build anything on it.
No.
It was waste of...
Tearing down, yeah.
It was just a waste. Yeah. It was very stupid.
Yeah. And now they have a new one as well, right? In Nordvest?
Yeah. Not far away from there.
No.
But there we also played.
Yeah.
But then we also...
But that's like a punk, or was it more punk rock venue, or was it everything there?
No. It was also like that.
Yeah.
But maybe not more punk, because... Okay. Because the Squatters was a strange combination of hippies and punkers.
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
They were not punkers and they were not hippies. There was this squatter style.
Yeah, yeah. It was just everyone who was interested in that house and like...
and more like activity. Activists.
Yeah.
Political activists.
Yeah.
Like a squad.
And sometimes they thought that even when we were inside the Copenhagen... We were from inside the old city, like we were artists.
Okay.
So there was also like a little fight against that.
Okay.
But then we played the original music. What they did, that wasn't that original, the music. It was just heavy shouting.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
And that was also okay. But there we played, but then... We also met a refugee, the actor today, Zlatko Buric. You know him?
No.
Yeah.
I don't know. He's from Croatia, and was because the war was there.
Yeah.
No, that was before the war. It was already in '70. He also in '80s. He was together with a Danish girl, and moved here. And he thought that we were great because we were so special. So he arranged a lot of tours to the eastern part of Europe.
Okay.
And especially Yugoslavia, as it was called.
Okay.
So very early, we started to travel also in Czechoslovakia and the whole eastern part. So that was actually maybe coincidence, but also a very nice timing we had there, because they really liked our way of playing very complex rhythmic things, but very fast and very not aggressive, but very complex and with a lot of energy.
Mm.
We were totally up under the roof,
yeah,
but and still are somehow.
Yeah. But it's Like, it was compositional music, right? You composed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It wasn't
a lot.
Like totally free.
No.
It was songs.
That's the thing with Cockpit Still, that we use it as a springboard.
Yeah,
we have a lot of very tight compositions.
Yeah.
Very fast, very tight, very special, because it's our own music.
Yeah.
They say, what kind of music do Cockpit Music plays? We play Cockpit music.
Yeah.
But then in Copenhagen, I started to do this because I was very welcomed in not specifically the jazz world.
Mm.
Actually, I was the black sheep there. Mm. But I didn't have to be around, because I could also be around in the... Also, all the painters and all the poets. I'm a poet too.
Yeah, yeah.
So I had to go also to open up a lot of exhibitions.
Mm.
And being there with the writers. So I went to the museums, or I could go to the basements of writers and perform there.
Yeah.
But then I made a workshop group called Taped Music, that was consisting of music, a lot of musicians from different parts of the music world in Copenhagen. It was actually the underground supergroup of very, very good musicians. And then we had this rule, or I made the rule, that we were tape hits, because everything was recorded on tape, and we were very much into tapes and tape. To be a tape head,
yeah.
We did a lot of recordings, but also used the recordings live.
We had tape
recorders.
Using
them as instruments. And then I will say, okay, we have a job at this exhibition. We have to open. Who is able to come at that point? Then the group of 10 people, I would say maybe 4 of them would be able to come. Sometimes 8, sometimes 10, sometimes only 1.
Mm.
So then you will do it. Or you were a quartet, you were a sextet, an octet. Mm-hmm. And then we practice, did the show, and that was it.
Yeah.
Then so that next, was actually next job. The first so, collective, so to say,
yeah,
that
it was,
you were...
Yeah, it was a collective. It was actually my group.
Your group,
but
yeah.
I called it a workshop because it was not like, but I'm not able.
Oh, then
okay,
then
we cannot
canceled,
play.
Yeah.
No. We play anyhow.
Mm.
Because I knew at that point that I wanted a big band, a larger band, sooner or later. And then when I have tasted that, had the taste of having a lot of people around me, I started to teach in saxophone, and in that direction, I made a 8-piece saxophone orchestra.
Okay.
And that was very funny, because then I expanded it, because then we also went to weddings. Of funerals, and we went in the streets, and we went. Now that was like our 50 years birthday, and we were in television because we could move. We could just, we could get in the door, playing,
and go,
and then we started to have
like a Lucia orchestra.
Yeah, thank you. That was nice. and then in the in. 1990, I made my first big band, because now I was ready also to compose to a lot of people. It took me a lot of time to learning by doing, because
you
there's so many tricks.
Up to this point, you
had
been
to
recording
practice.
And you had
many
recordings. Yeah,
a lot.
Just to
also, we were very early with Cockpit doing...
Yeah.
LPs.
Yeah.
But also a lot of tapes, because it was actually like the scene, it was so narrow, it was also very narrow to go and record music, because we had to go to the old hippies like Tømmerklaus, his institution, because we couldn't go to the popish, all the pop sat on the, all the studios, and they were too expensive and they were too stupid.
Yeah.
So we couldn't go there. So we had to wait for these small studios to open up.
Mm. And that's that. But that came up in that time, right?
Yeah.
Like that was a.
That was also
development
a thing.
Of that. Yeah.
Yeah. Do it very
first
much.
Home studios.
Do it yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Like when first time recording equipment became cheap enough to.
Yeah.
To have it in your basement and yeah.
And go from all these tapes. But very slowly. And that was what the whole thing was about. And we were a little angry about it. That was the slowness of the developments. Like, where were all these hybrid musicians? Where? Come on! And then when I came out, sometimes the very first principal of Rytmisk Conservatorium, this Erik Moserholm, in the old days when it just opened, he said that I should come once a year, at least, to have 1 week to confuse the
students.
The students.
Well, that's a start.
That was a start. Yeah, very good thing.
But then when you came into the conservatorium, at that point, there was only jazz musicians on the wall, like pictures.
Yeah, it even when I started, it was just
Coltrane.
Just Coltrane.
And beautiful.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
it's nothing.
And,
like
and so
that.
Someone did a rebellion during my second or third year where they changed all the pictures to like stock IKEA photos.
Also, there was not even a rocker.
Yeah, no.
It was only jazz. And there was this, at that point, a lot of this, what you. Not supposed to call it today because the jazz police today is not strong. The jazz police at that time was strong.
Okay.
Because there was a jazz club and it was a jazz shop and it was jazz in the radio. There was jazz. So you couldn't also, only because we knew some very nice people who could open up, okay, you have made a new record, you can come in and we will call it jazz. Maybe we will find one most jazzy like tune, but it was very very strict things, and it was very ridiculed still, ridiculed, and not taken seriously by just ignoring it. So, and that's nothing new, but I would say that. Then we had this feeling of being a promille of the whole picture.
Yeah.
Then, in the new century, then we started to feel that it would now grow a little, because now you could point in more directions.
Mm.
Oh, now there's some new jazz. They are coming from Jutland, and now they are coming from Roskilde. Now they are coming from the backyards of Nørrebro, Vesterbro. So you could have the feeling of but now we are more than just a handful.
Yeah.
But then we also thought that maybe it was just because if you before were 4.5 million. Now we are 5 million. Maybe it's just because of the that we are more because we are more people. But today I'm feeling that we have these 3 to 4%, because now people are born hybrid.
Yeah,
I have some students now. They are born hybrid.
Mm.
They don't think about genres.
No,
they are to everything, and in a natural way. Like people are very natural working with computers or
I agree. Like that's also really my feeling when it comes here. It feels much more than just 1% or something. Like I have of the musicians, there's a huge part that is playing everything that they want.
Yeah,
which is perfect.
It took a long
time. From what you tell right now, it sounds like you said it started a little bit in 90, 2, 3, 4. or yeah, even later?
In the start of the 80s.
In the start of the 80s.
For me.
Yeah.
And then, but there has been some few in the 70s. There will always be some few.
There will be one or two
through the history.
Yeah.
Also,
yeah.
Like I know from Torben Ulrich, yeah. You know, the tennis player.
Yeah.
He's my good friend today because he says about me that he has known me longer than myself. Because he patted my mother's stomach when I was in there. So there has always been these hybrid people,
yeah.
Or far-fetching people, or
yeah.
Great thinking, or yeah. Movable people.
But outside of the box. He is very much outside of the box.
Yeah.
Thinking.
Yeah. I mean, with his writing.
And he was like yeah. That just
or his movies.
After the Second World War.
Mm. I mean,
he was a little bit studenticose. In the 50s.
What does that mean? Like
that, yeah, yeah, and okay. Like, oh, I'm white. Can I play this black music?
Okay.
And this, oh, black and white. Oh.
Okay.
And then when it got to 60 and Ornette Coleman was there and Cecil Taylor, then,
yeah.
Then he was very much into it. So. I
really loved one of the artist talk he did here.
Yeah.
It was with CERN, I think, where he showed some movies.
Yeah.
Some movie had that he'd been working for like 10 years or something.
He can, he takes like, time out.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no time.
No time for that guy, no.
No.
That's
and, you can still meet him and he will start the conversation where we left it.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
From last year.
Yeah.
And he will do that. So you have to be on your marks.
Yeah.
Because, but he's so cool.
Yeah.
So you are not supposed to be cool. You're supposed to be tight, cool. Otherwise you are thrown off.
Missing, yeah. Yeah.
And I really love the scene right now.
Mm.
I really like it. Because now we can, we had the troubles when we thought about if we were going to make Peter Ole and I, if we are going to make before and make a big band, like a big, large orchestra, we have to talk about Scandinavia.
Mm.
We were not able to do it. Otherwise, we had to pull real jazz musicians, really rock and roll musicians, really classical musicians into this big band.
Yeah.
But we couldn't take our own people into this big band and make a big band. It was impossible.
Now
so
you can
now
kind of do that every
we can
Monday.
Do one each.
Yeah,
yeah,
kind of do it every Monday.
Yeah, Monday.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That kind
no
of
trouble.
No, yeah.
Now I've done it twice, and there's been no duplicates.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah.
And you can then at what point I made this the great Mongo Dillmons. The Mongo, that means the idiot, also for cowboy films. And Dillmons, that's the part of the Middle East Atlantis. So the big
okay,
idiotic
okay.
Atlantis or paradise.
Yeah.
And I make a group there with a lot of drummers, with a lot of horns and guitars and bass. And I had that for many years. And then Loco. That's also started Club Loco, the jazz club Loco, with Jakob Drong. Mm. He started with the help of us in the beginning because he said that it is so funny what you're doing, but so I'm going to help you. We're going to make a club for this. And
brilliant.
He didn't know how to run a club or anything. But,
like
he started out with some disasters
yeah.
Because we were playing in Club Loco in Kristiansand.
Kristiansand, yeah.
And then those who were playing didn't get salary, but right. We had a free bar. But if you came later, you were not supposed to pay because you had played. So you went in and you have free bar.
Yeah.
Mm.
But only the musicians came.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So where did the economy come from?
Yeah.
Nowhere.
Nowhere.
But no. Also this Stupnitz later on, you know, the big boat from East Germany.
No.
That came a big boat every year and was at the quay down at the...
Islandsbrygge?
No. At the library. The
yeah,
black,
yeah.
The black library. The
okay.
And then... and Loco. They were inviting all kinds of foreigners, but also a lot of Danish to have a jazz festival there. And that was high times for Logo, because we were just rooming around on this big, enormous boat.
It's like a cruise ship, kind of? Or
no.
Like, no?
Yeah. Very avant-garde.
Very avant-garde.
Yeah, very avant-garde.
A cruise ship is not very in the spirit of avant-garde, I think.
No, it was just an old freighter.
Okay. Going on a cruise, I think, is probably the least avant-garde thing you can do in your life.
But he's still very good. But what was I going to say there? Oh, that's what's because then in 2002, he said that to me that I should do my favorite band to open the year of 2002. In Stengade.
Yeah.
So I made this band consisting only of group leaders, but I was the oldest. So I took Kresen, Bosse, Andersgaard, Søren Kjærgaard, and my brain trust, Kasper Tranberg, Jakob Dinesen, Mads Hyne, and Jos Lund, and Stefan Sieben, and took them. No, not Stefan Sieben. They said, in Logo, but you have to have Stefan, will you? No. Yes. No. Yes. Okay. Well, I'm going to have a young guitar player there, but he was extremely good. So I made a band the very conservative way around, that was a band, and we could never play because they were so busy. So we played maybe one or two concerts a year.
Yeah.
And I was a little bit pissed about it. So now I've gone back to do the Mongo Dillmans, but now as the tape hit.
Okay.
So now I had just a big family of 20 musicians now and easily someone else.
Yeah.
But now I have this working group, so I don't have to start all over. We go to the practice room and they know the drill.
Yeah.
And then people will say to me, but we only can afford 8 of you. Okay, then I make a band for 8.
Mm.
Who's able? I am. Yeah, but now we are 9. Okay, I will take my salary out. We are 9. Something like that.
Yeah.
So now it's coming all the way around, but in 40 years.
Yeah.
That took too long, I think. But Denmark is also very slow. It's a slow country. It is.
But we kind of skipped a little bit in the middle when the scene really exploded. Because we said that it's true
back
that
there.
Right now...
Thank you.
I mean, I'm just curious. Because we had Kristen here, for example, and...
Dynamo.
Yeah, and he spoke also about the festival... Musketeer Festival that he set up. And then,
super
of course,
great.
The founding of 5E. And, and Tomo spoke about the
festival. And also
festival.
Ilk.
Yeah.
But then that was what happened.
And that was
and
around
They came from Lemvig. They came from the darkest the darkest Jylland. But they have a good music school up there.
Mm.
But they came like a group. It was not only Kresen.
Okay, yeah.
Søren was there too. Yeah, Andersgaard.
Yeah.
There was Jeppe Skovbak, and there was more people coming from there.
So they came
and
at the same time.
And there was some Vejle people, and then there was Roskilde people, there has always been this, you know, like Peter Ole, he made the Ninth World Music record company long time ago, where he released all the Danish meeting, Brötzmann, Alan Silva, Evan Parker, Fred van Hove, Americans. But that was still the classical avant-garde. But then there was this, and except for Skrap, then there was this new collectives, also Barefoot. People were there. Then there was suddenly 5E with nobody there for 1.5 years, but we were there. Yeah. But nobody came because, ooh, what is this?
Cool. Yeah. But you had to also climb through the fence.
Yeah.
And it was really like,
where is it? Do I dare to go in there?
Like, what this hole in the fence?
Yeah. And there's like other people next door.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, it's
and like the beginning, I guess. Mayhem.
Yeah, yeah.
Too.
But
and there was also Synd and Skam, you know, Amehul, it's called.
It was not like a punk thing, right?
Yeah, yeah, it's more punk, rock, singer-songwriter, artist thing. But then it rose. All the painters were very good at that in the 80s. They had some groupings. But then there was groupings all over. Not all over, but...
What year are we speaking about when for example, Christen, Søren and...
I would say from the new century.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And very fast there. Because I can remember that I had some releasing things there in the new century. And I thought that let's keep an eye on those...
those new guys.
Those new guys and new girls. What is this? And that was funny because then they are just there. Mm. And they didn't disappear. It was not like
short meteor passing by.
Yeah, Døgnflu.
Yeah,
as we say in Danish.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they came and.
But did your music get affected by them coming here, or do you feel, or did you go new ways, or how did you?
No. Only it's a matter of spreading out the energy, so you don't have this feeling of
being the only one.
Being the only one. Now I have to go again. They always said that, and I still have that in the normal society that we have to have six on the job, and I'm the sixth. Hmm. So we have normal. Oh, we have to have something different. Then I got the job.
Mm.
And I still do that in the normal society.
Mm.
But you can also get tired of being pigeonholed like that.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, come on, wake up. Why am I supposed to have this on my shoulders? Why don't you, lighten up?
Yeah, enlighten yourself.
Yeah. It has only been a pleasure.
Yeah.
No, because if you have more people, you also have more possibilities.
Yeah.
Then the clubs have to open, and then the jazz world was very angry about Bjarke, who had the jazz house, because he started to open up, and why call it jazz house? Not just call it the music house or some. But it was it was a jazz house.
I mean, they were fearing for their place, I guess, right?
Yeah. But they are so lazy. They don't do anything. So they could do something like we have been doing all the time. So finally, it was our turn to get into the jazz house.
They didn't have a big place to play.
They could. They have been spoiled for a long time.
Yeah.
And being so spoiled,
there's still a lot of good places to play for the traditional.
But
now it's called traditional.
Yeah,
I mean that's right. Like that's exactly the development you're speaking about right now. That back then it was just the jazz music.
Yeah.
And now you call it traditional jazz music for a reason.
Yeah, that might be true.
And you could also go to Mayhem, or you could just. Do it yourself more than there was more places. You could also there would be some bars that opened up for things like that. There would be small places you could rent a basement.
Yeah.
There was it just opened up because then you have to get these people, very active people, a room. But the Musketeer, that was like this wonderful dream. Because it was not only jazz musicians.
No,
it was also pop. Yeah. And you were supposed to, you were forced to do something. Or you had an idea. Mm. If I had an idea, I had one every year. Like everyone was welcome. And I did a piece for everyone. And I did that every year. But then a pop musician would say, oh, but I would like you. And then we sat in a big room with maybe 50 people, 60, 50. And then it was shouting like like Børsen, like the stock exchange.
Yeah, New York Stock Exchange.
Yeah, like that. And because you couldn't do anything else than have this oral practice.
Yeah.
You can just show maybe a paper or something. And then you went into the stage and did whatever. And you did that for hours.
Yeah, it was almost nonstop music, right?
Nonstop for like 12, 10, 10 hours at least.
Yeah.
And that was every year.
That was at Huse, right?
The different places.
Different places. Okay,
different places. But that was... That was something like Kresen, because he's a dynamo. His appetite in many ways is enormous.
Yeah.
He also did now the good school, the accordion school.
Yeah, accordion track.
Great place.
Yeah.
And a great initiative. And... He's, of course, a very strong power. And then you can see that this generation, they also have turned this school upside down.
Yeah.
So?
Yeah, now here in school,
that was impossible when I was young.
Yeah.
It wasn't even existing.
No,
because you said school, there was no school. You had to be street. You could get into the classical conservatorium, but only as a pedagogue. You couldn't really be there.
I mean, times have really changed here. Yeah.
So Chika, taught me a lot, and then the elder generation. Also Jan Kaspersen, that's a piano player, helped me a lot. Pierre Dow with a lot of tricks.
Hmm.
So it is
for clearly composing and stuff.
Yeah.
Did Chika also have a huge influence on you on writing, on poems and?
Also because I was already writing at that moment, because I started like at the same time thinking about what I would like to do, but then I had to be student first, and I also studied a little until I found out that no, now you have to stop all this expectations of others. So I've been studying since a lot. I'm still a lot into to writing and thinking and reading and listening and traveling and, but I'm born with energy, so I know with Kresen that we are just born with energy on different levels, but and then because I'm very strict raised. You shouldn't know, but you should know that I'm very strict, very old-fashioned, raised both in family and both in school. So I learned a lot about discipline and things like that, and my own handwriting, because I could choose my own handwriting. So I thought, well, I also must have my own handwriting. And as I said to the other ones, that it's the first time this year that I came too late. It is.
Yeah.
So I was actually the thing I like to when I go with the train or with the bus out here. It is reading the shitty newspaper.
Yeah.
Be totally prepared and be like a quarter to or say hello to everyone and say hello to the kitchen and say hello to the principal or hello. But I'm very happy when I saw you coming in. That was really important for me that you just sat there and were not angry.
No, why would we be angry?
Yeah.
We were like, we must have done a mistake.
Yeah, we were. we maybe wrote you the wrong time.
Exactly. That was 12.
yeah. No, but it's like it's true with the energy you say, because the first time I saw you here in Denmark, I think was in a concert where you just did spontaneous performance. You just went and read a poem before the concert started. Like it was obviously your friends on stage, but like not you were not part of the programmed band, so to say. And I've heard you do that a couple of times here, and it's always super amazing. Like, I really love it. And heard you play, of course, also, but that's also a big part of the image, so to say, that I have of you, that you are this energetic, this bundle of energy that's...
positive energy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. I should say that. But.
And also because I go everywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
So you are at all not the stupid places, but I go anywhere.
All the concerts.
Yeah, I go a lot and be around. And I love to check out the youth.
Yeah.
And be connecting to, also through teaching, but also just keep an eye and be very supportive.
Yeah.
Also, not only as a friendly matter, but also if there's any problems or if there's any lack of practice room or if there's any lack of knowledge or anything, even economy, then we can sort things out.
Yeah, yeah.
So... being like I was being treated very nice, I do the same with the youth and for many years, and also bring them in.
I think that's super important. And like just like seeing you at concerts, it's just like it's so great because like you check out everything and it's just like he's here.
Yeah, I mean, like everyone. Yeah.
It's just good. Like the old people care, kind of, or like the the established the greats care, kind of. If you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's just like you come through the door and everyone starts smiling. Yeah, it's like it's just like oh yes, that's cool.
I remember
it turned from TSO Sky Godot. What was it? Yeah, it turned from that to oh yeah,
TSO. Yeah,
you're not
the transformation.
You're not the Yoko Ono anymore.
No.
I remember the first time I met you, it was I was supposed to have some sort of lesson that was like you had no clue what the lesson was, and I think we were supposed to have another teacher initially, but you subbed and you came in with shakers. We were sitting there waiting and you came in with shakers, like singing a rhyme or a song, and we were just like, What's going on? So we thought it was my first year or something. Like it was the first
the shock
semester.
Treatment.
Yeah, it was the shock treatment totally. It was great. Like, what's going on now? It was awesome.
And actually, this is the old trick that you get people very concentrated because they do like this.
They wake up.
And they are very focused. Yeah. So okay,
now
number
we're,
one.
Now we're ready to go.
That's fine.
Yeah, I remember that was super, such like an, like it's like a different way. You never know, like when you have a teacher at any institution or whatever, right? You never know what, for the first time, you never know what you're getting. But you kind of got to know you in a split second. Okay, this guy with the, he will do, I mean, he will be unpredictable. He will do funny things. He will give positive energy and all these things. Yeah. Like it's very quick to like, get part of one's character, and you never get the whole thing, but I mean it's a really cool
thank
it's
you really make my day.
That's like, good, like you said, like when you started music you were interested in doing your own thing. I mean, and that comes through in your personality, I guess. And that's what we're trying to flatter you with right now.
And that goes for I knew that if a grown up and a famous musician like Chikai could say that and mean that and be very specific about it, also rather irritated about you if you started to quote Charlie Parker cliche or Ornette Coleman thing or didn't listen to the right stuff or do the right thing, then he would be very specific about it. Yeah. and that was very nice.
Clinton also has that.
So, yeah, it was very nice. Also because then later on, I found out that it was even with more meaning because I didn't lose any time. Instead of, you know, you have to do a lot of things you don't want to, and then you find out what you want to, you have to break it up and begin from the start again. Then I've had a lot of hassle about, oh, but you're not able to play like this and that, or you cannot play a standard, or you cannot play a bebop. Or some American guys, David Murray and things like that, when I went to these summer schools in before, he said,
like,
Brandbjerg and Vallekilde.
Vallekilde, that
was very before.
Okay.
It was only once a year in the summertime. In 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So we went there and he said that, and I will of course never remember, forget it, because he said that you have to learn that bebop, otherwise you are dead. And
again?
Again. But what he meant, it was of course that if I have to play Afro-American music, I had to go through the bebop. But I'm not supposed to play Afro-American music. Hmm. I'm supposed to play music. So that was where it came very clear.
Hmm.
Stop
wonderful,
this
yeah.
shit talk. Yeah. And
I mean, that's a development that us being just recently graduated from the conservatory here, but I remember, like, especially during my conservatory time, it was, that's the biggest struggle, right? Like, you want to do your own music, but then you also like bebop, you also like hip-hop, you also like traditional jazz, you like free improvisation, you like classical music, you like modern, like there's all these things, and to find your own character is it takes, at least for me, it took quite some time. I mean, other people are really quick with it, I guess, but so if you could elaborate a bit more on the process, like you said, the moment when you got confronted.
Yeah, but that was one of the extreme moments.
Yeah,
but I got very clear about it. And then I got very clear about that I started to write. And at the same time, in 80, I was having my debut with Cockpit on a double LP. Mm. But I was also on print for the first time.
Yeah.
Okay. And at that time already, I knew that you're not supposed to be... I had to be the same writer as the same musician. So, of course, I had to find my own writing, but I also have to find my own style in that.
Mm.
So I started to practice my own style of reciting, of remember things and put it into the stage.
Mm.
Like, so I became, instead of an entertainer, I found out that I should be an outertainer. And that's what my job is also. Mm. So I'm a writer and a musician, and you can also in writing, you can be a poet, you can write novels, you can write angry letters, you can write, you can do all kinds of things.
Yeah.
You can be a politician or a musician. Then you have you can compose. You could be a band leader. You can be an instrumentalist. But then I would have to combine these two things, so because I love the Trinity, the three. So you have like the pyramids, you have the left, you have the right, and you have the top.
Mm.
So you have to combine things. So I would like to combine this being able to perform literature or perform literature with music. So, but not glue music to literature literature to music, but make it to a organic thing and try to find out how.
Yeah. So you think that was like the most important process of finding your own, was this combination of these things?
Yeah, I knew that it would continue.
Yeah.
Because I was not going to fail the thing, but I just had to think more than being too different.
Mm.
Because everyone still wants me to be two different things. Mm. Because they say, they always ask me this question, like, can you live by it? But That's for everyone. Yeah. Every artist is having this, but am I a corpse or what? I mean, what's that question? Can you live by? Well, but then they ask me always, what do you spend most time on? Literature or music?
But and that, for a long time ago,
and and not a separation because I just work. So that's a difference of material. You have tones, and you have your saxophone, and you have your piano, and you have your note sheets and things like that, or recording. But it's a material. It's a matter of materials, because if you write, you're into the same thing, but it's just the material that's different.
Yeah, so that's what I mean. Like, it's a separation of materials, but in the sense of the artistic process.
The stuff is the same.
I mean, like, walking through the rain is artistic process if done in a certain way. Yeah. So
I use this story.
But what are you working on in that moment? I mean,
so that's a very stupid question. And if I'm a little bit annoyed, I would answer in a very annoying way.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But mostly I just I'm polite. Yeah. But the discussion, there's no more talk. Because this is the most stupid. they don't mean harm in the question. No, but it's,
and I think it's
stupid.
It's also, I think, like, how ideas are born are mysterious to people that don't have them, I think.
Yeah.
And they don't get that.
Even to them that have them sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. But it's like you eat a piece of cheese and you get a brilliant idea. But if you didn't eat the piece of cheese, you wouldn't, maybe. Or exactly. So that's why I think they think you spend time on one thing or the other or whatever, because they don't get that you work on music when you write your literature, and when you write you play your saxophone, you practice composition.
But
or all the things at the same time.
I have a working space at home like this, but then I have two. I can go all around.
Oh, yeah.
So when I work with this, I can just do like this. But mostly now the plan is that I had to wrap up the year, go through the year in my memory, and with all the records I've bought, find out, are they going inside the collection or are they staying outside?
Okay.
And checking out the books, and then I know that in the beginning of the new year, I would take off 2 months off because I'm writing a book. And that's the time you do that, because you're not supposed to. I have to release a record. Then, so this year it will disturb me a little.
Yeah.
But then you choose sometimes that I have to write a lot in at least 2 months, because then in March that will be a little bit. That's, I can do things like that.
You
arrange things, but I will still have music in my head.
Exactly. As you said. So it's still like this whole process of
the whole autumn has been very busy and not. I've just written a lot of new music poems to the new program to Winter Jazz.
Okay, in February.
To 12 new things.
Oh,
and that was nice.
Is this going to be performed, or?
I'm going to perform them.
Yeah,
but they're in print.
Oh, in print
program.
Oh, yeah, okay. So it's like artistic spice inside the program.
Yeah.
That sounds super nice. Yeah.
Mm.
So this entertainer business has also been very good for many years for the economy, because then they say, oh, you are the multi-artist. And I always make fun of them because I can only do two things.
You're a duo artist.
Yeah, but then I say, but that's one, two, incomprehensible. 1, 2, 1,000. You know, 1, 2, and
infinity.
But then I can travel around doing music and literature in one thing. And I love to have some musicians or poets with me. I have some small bands doing the things, but I can also travel alone. So, and that's the thing to combine everything.
Yeah.
And that's the same. We will have five poets in the evening and me.
Mm.
So I will start or close it. Or
yeah.
So it's also nice.
Yeah.
Because, and that's what Kresten is also doing, that
yeah.
How do we manage to live without should do some stupid things?
Mm.
And that's a lot to ask for very narrow artists. Like I'm very broad, but I can only do the experimental things. I'll not be able to do all kinds of stupid things.
No.
And I will not be able to that. But then how do you then have economy to live? All right. So that has always been, how can you do that without losing yourself?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
This is not a problem anymore, but you still have to be around.
Yeah, how to live your life.
Yeah.
That's my luxury. Ancient question, I think.
I have a big flat. That's actually very nice. And then I have a practice room.
Mm.
If I'm going to make a lot of noise.
Mm.
And that's it. So I can travel, and I have the instruments, and I have the books and records and clothes.
Mm. Mm.
And a lot of jujus. I have a lot of... my whole working room, my whole space is plastered with strange things.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, like figures or posters or... So when like the young one space. Have never been at my place before, they were like, hey, come on, get in here.
Just let me look at everything first.
Everything first, yeah.
Give me 2 hours to look around.
Yeah. That's right.
And that's my dream.
But you can, we can visit each other, because then when it's finished, we can do something.
Yeah.
Hang.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
And you also said...
Drink wine or tea.
Or tea.
Or eat cheese and get inspired.
Mm. Yeah, and get good ideas.
A very strong one.
Very strong cheese. Mm. I saw your concert at Skuespillerhuset. Was that this summer or was it last summer? I don't remember.
With Chalet?
Yeah, it was a duo concert with a percussionist.
Yeah, from Selhinder.
Yeah, that was such a great concert. And
thank you.
And it's just like all these different sounds and different moods that just like... Because sometimes I feel like avant-garde experimental music is very serious, and I think you're serious, but you have multiple flavors of seriousness. Like you have more playful or more silly or sounds that go different ways. And I wonder how do you work with that, and or how do you how do you think? Do you think about that, or do you just like do you, and then all these colors just naturally comes out?
That's also a matter of the other one.
Yeah,
and the other one I've been really looking after, like the Selhinder, you know, the group of the girls, Selhinder.
No, I don't know.
There are two drummers, Frøken Jacobsen.
Mm.
Anja Jacobsen and Charlene Negari.
Yeah.
Those, they're the two drummers. Mm. Then there is a trombone player, Maria Bertel, and the saxophone player, Sonja Labianca, and then a violin player called Maria Dickmann. And they play through enormous Marshall speakers.
Okay.
So they can play their horn, the strings, but they can also... be completely another place.
Mm.
So it's also a very heavy group.
Mm.
So
wonderful, yeah.
But then she's very serious, the drummer I played with, and very young, and she wanted to practice, but she's also into this, how big a picture of the world can we create in 45 minutes? And that's in no trouble, because it has to be tasteful. But then we go from these, and she already knows that you have to go from the very refined, nearly silent, to the mid, to the top. So you have a big, big room you have to demonstrate. And through the years, I hope that people are not those. But I don't do wrong anymore, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It's oh, I sounded like a hip hopper.
I don't.
You
do
know what I mean? You know what I'm talking about?
I don't do wrong anymore. You
talking
know
about like that shit, man.
Now you're you getting into the flow about here.
You get me? It is that before in my larger orchestras or with I do a lot of collaborations. And before that, I could maybe make a mistake. But that would be okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Or choosing a wrong person. But I'm not doing that anymore.
Do you think that's from experience, or is it a decision?
Experience.
Because I have heard this, this is probably jazz wisdom, but I've heard this thing that Paul Blay just decided that he never did wrong at some point, and then he started playing way better. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's
that there is no wrong anymore.
Yeah, he decided that I cannot play a wrong note. I cannot do wrong, and then suddenly his music started to grow. But so I was wondering
if he has been alive and somebody said, "Would you like to play a duo with Paul Blay?"
Yeah,
I would say no, thank you.
Okay, so it's also experience.
Because that would be
to.
Too much trouble and too not nice.
Yeah,
because he was not a nice man. In that, he played nice.
Oh yeah,
but he was so full of himself, so it would be impossible. Actually, I don't think he would play.
No, that's
he would wait to
finish that with
Kreisen.
Yeah.
But then,
but that was just like an example of because.
But
I
thank
had
you the for the for that's what I really like that you have this. That you have maybe this feeling that you are playing the same thing over and over again, or you do the big, great, broad view of things. So you have to be very consequent. And that's really like consequence of performing also. And with her, it was so natural. That's another word. Natural to expand the palette.
Yeah, it's so nice as an audience member. Maybe it's nice as an improviser. I don't know if it's.
It was we had practiced that a lot.
Yeah, but it's nice as a musician or an improviser when you don't know what's going to happen at all. Because sometimes you see concert that I know where this is going, but you don't like. I know I will be surprised 10 more times during this concert.
Oh, yeah.
I have no idea what's. But you're just like, what's going on next? It's so. I love that.
You know, like
so much.
Steve Lacy, he says this. There's a lot of people saying good things about it, but you have to be very observant about the predictable and the unpredictable. That you have to have both things. Juggling with both things. So you have to be very chic, but you also have to be very open. So there will be a lot of strict things, but in the strictness, you will have a lot of openness to interpret the strictness or vice versa. So I think it's very nice to have both sides. And not being able to even judge if it's improvised or not.
No.
Is this composed or is it improv or what?
Yeah.
That's also.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what's also about that concert. It was just like, yeah, you're telling me that between that it's songs or, but I don't know.
I don't know.
But it doesn't matter. It's just great.
What music is that? It's music.
It's music.
Yeah, yeah. It's cool.
It's cool.
It's great.
It's also like such a
and
cool
and then
room.
I can feel now that when I got 60, I really realized that I also was moved up to the veteran thing, but being treated extremely nice. Mm. I mean, then the jazz house, they gave me the jazz house in birthday present.
Yeah.
Do what you want. Yeah.
It's open. It's yours.
Yeah.
Thank you. And that's okay. And it's nice to see that finally there's so many people. And I still have the urge to do a lot of things still.
Yeah.
I've just sent them my new double LP. And it's going to be a new thing that I've always wanted to do, but never came around.
Yeah.
It's a loop record with my old transportable
things.
Wang, jigga, wang, jigga, wang,
jigga. Now we're back to the rapper thing.
And then cut them through and then compose music on top of it and then have all my friends who are able to do. Are you able? Yeah. Okay, come. We record. And it's just finished.
Yeah.
I think you showed us the work in progress of that here in school 1.5 years ago or something in a workshop. You just showed us, like, this is what I've been working on right now.
And it's
cutting loops of the records and then have people play over it.
Yeah. And that's finished now.
Wonderful.
Sent.
Yeah.
So it comes, it's released the 1st of February.
Wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
And that's the thing I worked with, also with reciting and things. I travel around with these gramophones. So it's an old thing, but I never got to the thing that doing an album.
Yeah.
So I did 24 tracks. It's only 21 on the record. But if you listen to one track, the next track would not be anything like it.
No.
So it's around the world kind of thing, because I've taken all kinds of shitty records. So there's some classical, there's jazz, there's Middle Eastern, there's African, there's whatever, and then compose things and having people improvise or playing strict things, but everything is one.
Yeah,
you know, you cannot say, okay, I will count you in.
one.
There.
Yeah.
But that's nice.
Yeah. Yeah. There's another jazz story about this Norwegian drummer, Jon Christensen, that he played in. I mean, it doesn't matter if it's true or not. The story is nice anyway. He played with his singer, and the singer is like, during the break or something, where she's not singing and they're playing, and she starts sweating and turning around like, what's going on? Because they're improvising, and then she finally turns around and asks, where's the one? And he's just like, the one is both here and there. Just like
everywhere.
Yeah. I've heard that too.
Yeah.
That's great.
That fits his playing really well, actually.
Yeah. I just went to Oslo and played with my young quartet.
Yeah.
And then we were talking about Jon Christensen because they have put him in a home.
Oh,
now.
I didn't know.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So he's actually...
His health has been declining, I think.
But he's not able to...
walk?
Yeah. So they put him in a
care
home. Yeah.
But that was because I had a speech about Norwegian musicians through my whole life.
Yeah.
And that was funny because there was a lot of young people and they were like, how can you know all these people? I've never heard about them.
Yeah.
But the old ones, they were, that was great. In Improverket,
Yeah, that's Café Herberg, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was
I played
great.
There last week, I think.
Yeah. I think it was Sine.
Yeah, she's organizing
that Reusum.
Series. Yeah, yeah, they're organizing that series. Yeah. Yeah. We didn't play on that series, we just played...
In the club.
Yeah.
It was great.
But yeah, that's a really cool place.
Yeah.
I mean,
and they were cool, like,
yeah,
hanging afterwards.
Yeah,
and,
yeah. And they have like 300 concerts a year or something mm-hmm. in there. It's just like, that's just insane.
Well,
And we played there and we played super loud and no one complained. And everyone was just like, yeah, cool, go for it. And it was just like, great.
loud.
Yeah, but like sometimes people are like, when mm-hmm. you don't know where you're coming. I mean, it felt like when you play at 5E, right? Everyone is just like, thumbs mm-hmm. up.
Yeah.
Cool.
And now it's funny because now they have get the levels, the Monday and Tuesday club.
Yeah, yeah.
So the Monday club is still rowdy and the Tuesday club is a little bit more refined.
Well, it's more, how do you call it? It's organized.
Like curated.
Yeah, curated. And, yeah. It's much more curated.
Yeah, and you sit there in 5E, you never know what.
Yeah,
it could be a pass.
Some people faint in 5E.
Oh yeah, yeah. Or hit themselves. Or
hit themselves.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think we've been going on for quite some time now, right?
Yeah, about an hour or so. Yeah,
about an hour.
Yeah. So if you have more stories to tell, or if not, we can have you back some other time. It's lovely to talk
to
you.
We could do. It's very easy the way you chose that you are holding me into a nice area.
Mm.
But we did some chronologically funny things going back and forth. And
that's also what's interesting, just like people talking, right?
Yeah,
exactly.
It's interesting for us to talk and it's interesting.
That was our idea of the podcast, not to do interviews,
but
to really have like a free form of conversation,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
So this episode, we will actually do the introduction at the very end because we forgot to do it in the beginning.
Oh, yeah!
or we do a separate one.
We maybe could cut it, yeah.
If people ask you all kinds of questions, I'm always a little sad afterwards because I forgot to.
Yeah.
I forgot to tell this and I forgot to tell this and that. And now... Because it's like this, that is like an improvisation under guardians. So afterwards, I think it went fine.
Yeah.
So I don't have to say, I could have told you.
Yeah. Or I could have used this word instead of that word. And just that's the worst. And like, this word is perfect.
Yeah.
No one will know about my perfect word.
Stupendously. Miscellaneous.
Oh, yeah.
Stupendously. Yeah. The perfect word.
Yeah. Yeah. There will be a lot of stories. But,
But I mean, if... It's
if it feels like a natural
it feels
ending.
Like
yeah,
an
then
it's like
there's this it was a little blow that that Insula, the little record shop in Lukasgade, had to close because he was back into doing this tapes.
Yeah.
We did tapes again with him.
Yeah, it became a wave again. Yeah,
yeah. And he was like that. He was the only record shop guy in the whole town who paid what you're supposed to pay for a record.
Yeah.
But we said to him, but we love you, so you will get it for half.
Yeah.
No. I will pay you exactly what you are going to have.
Mm.
Yeah, but then, a little less. Okay. He gave a little less and then a gift card. So you couldn't get out of it.
Yeah.
The rich record shop will do... Oh no, we are not paying for anything. We take them a commission.
Yeah, exactly.
Come on. Yeah.
We'll only pay you when we have sold out the 10 you got us, and then like you never hear from them again.
No, but and he was very nice in many ways.
It's very sad. It was a nice
place. That was like a central.
Yeah,
you go there. Hey, how do I find this guy? Because his telephone number is And then next time, hey, here's the number. Did you know that? What? But then he was very happy about it because he was very worried. He has been worried for 2 years about the economy and his family,
yeah,
and things like that. So he was so relieved to close it,
yeah,
and that helped us.
Yeah,
so
to accept it. Yeah,
we
yeah,
saw
yeah,
him.
Yeah. Yeah,
and we said sorry because but if we, it's very our milieu is very vulnerable.
Yeah.
Mm.
So if something is closing down, something new has to open immediately, yeah, because we cannot go down.
No.
We have to keep it going. So it has to go like this. You cannot...
No.
Oh, God. So, but now it yeah, just got...
a little bump.
But a I little mean, bump.
But I mean, I know, for instance, Tuomo is doing this flat store
yeah
thing, but I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if it's like,
but it's only
more like
for his own label, I think.
No. You yep can, you can give, you can put
okay,
your
yeah
all your stuff there. But I mean, it's very personal, so you have to make an appointment with Tuomo. Yeah. So it's not like a shop that has opening
no
hours. So, but it's still, no, still, still yeah like a good initiative.
I still owe him one. Tuomo, because he phoned me many years ago and asked me, could you come and play this solo or do something in a little house or something? I said, yeah, this and this date. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm not able to do that.
Mm.
And then he did it a lot of times. And every time it was like that.
Oh.
I had to say, but I'm not. Mm. And then I had to say to him, but I hope one day because I'm not making, you know, excuses for not coming.
No.
But then he had to stop.
Mm.
Oh.
So we still need one. And when we see each other, it's great.
Yeah.
But I know when I see him, I owe him.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, he also is not doing the Freedom Festival this year, I think, right?
No.
No. So it wasn't done this year, but I guess that's because he got his second child
yeah,
and
yeah
stuff.
I mean,
so
he's
it,
super busy
so
right
it,
now.
There's a lot of
really busy
work to do. He's doing a lot of good work. So I mean,
yes,
it makes total sense that sometimes
yeah
you have to.
And he also has family.
Yeah, yeah, two children now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
so second one came yeah October, I think. Yeah.
And how are you? How are you?
I'm good.
You're
yeah
good.
Yeah.
You're good too.
I mean, my second son was born in October also.
Whoa!
So I'm also a bit in the family business right now.
Yeah, Div.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
But
besides everything
that,
is
I'm working
is okay
on some albums right now, like one that will be released, like I think beginning of January.
Mm-hmm.
So
soon.
Yeah. Stuff is happening.
Yeah. Good.
I think my first solo record is coming this month.
This month?
Yeah.
But you don't have a fixed release date?
Yeah, well, I mean, we have set the release date, but we don't know when the press... We have just...
Oh, yeah, okay.
Because we had some hiccups with
yeah
the cover art because it was too black. And then they say like, oh, if you put this on, it will just like smear out. So we had to change some of the percentage. I don't really know the details of this, but we changed it and then we got back to them and then they have to print up. But
yeah,
that's your first solo record, right? Like, I'm really curious about it.
Yeah,
I had some
is it
pre-listens.
Solo.
It's just solo. It's six solo improvisations that I did in my bathroom.
Yeah,
the stuff I was allowed to pre-listen sounds super awesome.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm curious for the full album.
Fun.
Yeah, how did you record it?
I recorded with a Zoom and just like two microphones and a Zoom. Just laying around in the bathroom.
Yeah.
So just like when my landlord was on holiday. So I played. That was fun.
Hvad siger du, så når vi siger forhåndenværende midler?
Oh yeah, self-sufficient. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, as we spoke before,
yeah,
whatever is there, if you need to bring something out, you just have
yeah
to do it,
yeah,
right? With the equipment you have.
Yeah, and
you can't go
look
to
around
expensive pop studios, like you said.
No.
Yeah.
Like,
and but then also the bad omen.
Bad omen. Yeah.
With these, but now it's no problem.
Mm.
I did my album at home also,
yeah.
But
yeah,
then
yeah
it was mixed very good.
Yeah.
By Palace Gore.
Mm.
Yes, very good. But then you have to balance things.
Yeah.
Always. Yeah. But you don't have to wait for anything.
Yeah, because then it's not happening.
No.
That's my experience, at least.
Yeah,
if you wait forever, you wait.
I think forever. Waiting is the definition of not happening.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Unless. Yeah. And also,
but sometimes now you wait for the result.
Yeah.
But you're doing other things.
Yeah. I'm already cutting my next one.
Yeah.
But that's a process because I have this when I do it at home. I think that. That the bad thing about doing solo improvisations at home is that you record too much. So I recorded just five, 6 hours, and then like cutting it down is just like such a it's an experience in some sense. It's just like, is this good? Is this better? This
You can't even judge yourself.
But is everything good? Can everything be good?
And I always get it like when I get the test press.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I get. I cannot. Oh, it should be. Oh no, this.
Get cold feet.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
It sound horrible and things like that.
I should have. Yeah.
And then somebody says that it's just your expectations. They are too mixed. They're fucked up.
Hmm.
Because you've been listening to that for 2 years.
Yeah.
And now you want it to. Surprise you,
yeah.
But it cannot surprise you.
No, because you all know it.
And then I went to different friends and listened to it other ways, and they thought, "Oh, it sounds great."
Yeah,
and bad speakers, good speakers.
Yeah.
Okay.
And also,
it's interesting to hear that that never goes away. This thing of listening to the test or to the. Done recording and being like, oh, this isn't good enough. Like, I wanted it to be more like this.
Yeah.
My expectations were so much higher.
Much more power.
I also, for me, just listening with people in the room changes for me.
So much.
Just like, even if they're not paying attention, it's just like, and then you're like, oh, maybe it's not that bad. Or maybe you get like some perspective just because there's another person beside you.
I almost have the feeling that somehow, because you usually show it to people that you know, right? Yeah. Like quite well or rather well, that you almost hear it through their character a little bit. Like I have this really weird experience that hearing with different people in the same room on the same speakers, it still sounds very different.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because, I guess the moment is different, but mostly because the person sitting next to me, I'm trying to hear it through their ears or something. Yeah. It's super
and
interesting.
Then sometimes you hear it for the first time.
Yeah, really, yeah, exactly.
Because
it feels new.
That's not how it sounded when you were alone with it.
No.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like,
how does that work?
Yeah, how does that work?
How does that work? Like,
and actually, nobody knows. Still.
Like, it's such a huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the experience of listening to your own music with someone else.
Yeah.
It's really not the same music you're listening to, but it's the same file. It's the same LP.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That's something that I can't understand.
No.
But
how did you come up with this idea?
With the podcast?
Yeah.
I think it's, I'm addicted to other types of podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
Like
a listener?
Yeah, like a listener.
Or
like
user?
A user of podcasts. I'm a huge user of podcasts, like insane amount. And then it's just, there is like no one doing this thing, I think. Mm-hmm. Or maybe there are some, but I mean, it's fun to do it ourselves also. And then it's just interesting to hear the stories and we want to put them out and share them with people. So I think that's...
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of... once we had the idea, there were a lot of things that we wanted to encompass, like also documenting the scene a little bit as it is right now or how it developed, but also meeting all the cool people and having a talk with them, like egoistic motive, right?
But do you also make... do you listen to it and make some cuts or the pauses or the mistakes? No.
Preferably, we would not do any cuts.
Okay.
I think on the episode with Jakob Anesko, which is completely done with mixing and everything, I think I did one cut of 2 minute discussion that went somewhere where, and then afterwards we were like, this should maybe go out.
Yeah.
But besides it's like all as it was in the room.
That I really was happy about because Cockpit Music was a group, and then a lot of people now they have groups again, and that's very nice instead of Kristen Osgood, now he has a quintet.
Yeah.
But it is a group because it's the same
people all the time. Yeah.
And they are now Unity, and there's Baugilaud or Selhind or there's groups. And that's very good.
Yeah.
There's also this Oran Day, the Supermelle, Melgaard, Jakob Melgaard. Oran Day, Year and Day Collective. Also great.
I have to find out about that.
Supermelle.
No, but it's when I studied in Amsterdam before, that's true that there it was much more fluent, like the lineup in bands was like, oh, the drummer can't make it, well, let's get a different one.
And you have that in when you improv, that you still have a lot of combinations.
Yeah.
But it's also great, very specific to have a long running. Anders Melgaard.
You corrected yourself. Yeah. I think it's, I mean, the reason I think there's a lot of bands, like if you're just coming from this school, is I think it's because you cannot replace the people because they're so specific in their skills and their sounds.
But that's nice. Instead of having these ad hoc, and you get tired of it also because it cannot be great. Maybe a lot of people think that it's great just because everybody knows what they're playing.
Yeah.
In the jazz, there will be a jazz group. I'm the one. We play all the things you are. And they play. And it's mostly it's like, yeah, and what?
Yeah, but it's also like the great tradition, the great jazz bands of the olds. Are consistent of very specific people, right?
Yeah.
Hundreds
of gigs.
You cannot. If you take Tony Williams out of Miles Davis' new quintet, it's just like, I don't need to know if I'm going to check that one out.
Well, that's true.
I think they
usually played a lot of gigs, right?
And then they changed
after a few years. I mean, Miles Davis had a lot of lineups, but that always was running for quite some time before he changed. But I mean, it's a tradition that comes out more of the jazz jam sessions, I guess, and it does work, or session musicians.
Yeah,
but it's a very different thing. And
but groups, they're nice.
It's also
groups good.
Yeah, groups good.
Napster bad.
Jazz banana.
Yeah.